David Noyes has been traveling the world for decades, recording photographic images of remote places and exotic people, from Tibet to Kenya. In addition to winning an endless list of awards for his extraordinary images, Noyes is also a superb storyteller, and David has combined both arts into a new book that's already garnered more than 14 gold and silver awards from travel journalist and book publisher associations. I had the pleasure to be in David's company exploring Sichuan province in China, where we sat down for a conversation at Chengdu Airport on our way home. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me as we visit with the storytelling photojournalist David Noyes. David Noyes is much more than a photographer. He's an essayist, a writer, and he melds the two, and he did so masterfully in a new book that just came out entitled The Photographing Tourist, A Storyteller's Guide to Travel and Photography. David, howdy.
Hi, thanks for having me, Tom.
It's a wonderful pleasure to travel with you and look through your eyes as we walk down alleyways and see what you captured and how you captured it.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these are fun. It's also difficult work. You know, it's hard to work the streets in an unfamiliar city, in an unfamiliar place, and try and find photographs kind of among the chaos of some of these alleyways that we happen down.
But I look in your book, and there are these National Geographic moments that you deftly captured, just the people. If that's just that layer throughout your book of just the people pictures is worthy of a book.
Well, part of what I'm trying to tell and the story that I tell in the book is to have the courage to approach strangers. And there's nothing more difficult for a photographer in a foreign land than to approach a stranger and ask for a photograph. And sometimes, or most of the time, the answer is going to be no. But every once in a while, somebody will give you a yes, and you have a real opportunity to connect with another human being on a very personal level. And those are some of my favorite photographs and some of my favorite travel memories.
And what's fascinating, you don't know whether you're going to get, you are trying to steal my soul, or yes, you know, that vanity that they're excited. And I watch them light up when you ask to take their picture.
Yeah, you never know. And, you know, and that's why I say have the courage to approach a stranger. And sometimes they're fun and playful, other times not so much. And, you know, one of the things I caution to, I've got a little sub-chapter in my local lifestyles called Beware of the Cute Kid with a Baby Lamb. And one of the things that I talk about a lot with professionals and amateur photographers alike that are traveling is to be aware of the situations. A lot of times people want to get paid. Increasingly, places that I have been that have tourist communities, people want to be paid for a photograph. And they know that there's value, especially if somebody has an exotic look. And the caution I make, and I do and I have compensated people over the years that have allowed me to take their photograph, but I always beware of the children. And, you know, that's one of the important notions that I try to get across is when children get paid for photographs or they beg tourists around the world, especially in the developing world, they're working. Usually their mother's nearby, and, you know, they're part of the wage earner of the family, and they're not going to go to school. You know, that's the tragedy. If children start making money for the family, they don't end up going to school, and they spend a life begging for tours.
So we help backfire the economic strength and growth of these communities, their potential, thinking we're doing good.
Yeah, I think there are consequences, and, you know, it's hard, and, you know, I launched a charity nonprofit a couple of years back called the Innocent Eyes Project, based on the broad concept of it's impossible to travel into remote corners of the developing world and not be touched by the innocent eyes of a young child. But we enter their worlds for a moment in time, and we go home and we leave with our photographs and our memories, but we rarely leave anything behind. So the Innocent Eyes Project was my way to start leaving something behind.
Let's dovetail back to your book. I was reading it last night, and I was absolutely captivated reading your words. You know, you're a really good writer because you can seduce and capture the reader's eye and mind and take them with you on your journey. You're one with the Maasai. Tell us about that. That's really cool. In the lions. I love that moment.
Well, thanks. You know, over the years, you know, I've been a photographer pretty much all of my life, and, you know, becoming a travel writer has been a bit more of a challenge for me, and I take, you know, great pride, especially the awards that I have won for my travel writing. You know, the photography is one component of what I do, but actually that narrative storytelling with words is also part of the process, and, you know, a photograph can't necessarily tell all of the story, and, you know, the Maasai is a wonderful part of that story. I've had the opportunity over the years to visit a lot of remote tribes in East Africa. It's one of the places, and I'm asked a lot, do I have favorite places? And the place that keeps drawing me back is East Africa. And photographing the Maasai and the Samburu and some of the remote tribes, I have a photograph of a Pokot woman that was a chance encounter. And some of those are unique and amazing experiences. You know, we can plan our itineraries as travelers, but we can't plan the chance encounters along the way.
So you're watching the tribal dance, and then you see what I love, the mini Maasai. That was cute. Tell us about that moment.
Well, there's a welcome dance that every traveler gets when you go into a Maasai village. And there is a level of, you know, this is contrived, and it's for the tourists, and markets get set up. And one of the things that I like to find is the authenticity around the edges of those tourist experiences. And the mini Maasai kind of were off to the side. And the little boys, you know, and they're watching their uncles and their fathers perform for the tourists, you know, their famous jumping dance. And, you know, they start jumping along off to the side. Nobody really saw them. But, you know, I kind of glanced over and had the opportunity just to grab a couple of shots of the young boys in a truly authentic moment.
But you got busted for that.
Yeah. one of the tribal women kind of saw me squatting down to photograph one of the boys, and, you know, I saw her through my viewfinder coming at me with purpose in her stride, and she came right over and kind of led the little boy by his arm away from me, you know, basically saying the little ones, you know, are kind of off limits and, you know, kind of leave them alone. And, you know, I think that's part of what I was talking about with situational awareness, you know, and having respect for the communities that we visit, especially tribal communities where it's so very easily, you know, a us and them. It's hard to find, you know, ways to connect. And those are, you know, those are difficult, challenging moments. And you just have to be respectful, you know, of the various communities that we visit.
As I think I alluded to earlier, your book is like two planes of existence. It's an essay. It's a group of stories of your life journeys. They're very evocative, but they're also very hands-on practical tutorials on how to have a better eye and what to look for. As a photographer, give us a couple of your favorite tips and how you weave those together.
Well, I think what I mentioned a little while ago is to have the courage to approach a stranger. That's kind of the number one tip, especially if you want to do some cultural components. Another one that I often recite is get the cliche out of the way. You know, we all have, when we're going someplace new, we have done our research, we found the photographs online, we know the moments that we want to get, and so go find it, get that shot, and then kind of work the environment a little bit different. And the title of my book, The Photographing Tourist, The Storyteller's Guide of Travel and Photography, is related to, even as a travel journalist, a professional travel writer and photographer, almost all of the travel that I have ever done. So I titled my book, The Photographing Tourist, as a little bit of a different twist on kind of the travel photography book. Most of my work, almost all of my work, even as a professional travel writer and photographer, has been on a organized tour with a fixed itinerary, usually with a group of strangers. And it's a very different way of working, but it's also how most of us travel. We usually join a group somewhere. We're not free to go backpacking across Cambodia for 3 months, you know, kind of hanging out with the local folks.
But you do that.
No, I don't.
You have.
No, I haven't.
No?
No. Almost all of my travel experience has been on a fixed itinerary, often trips that I have designed and led. I've led a bunch of photographs photographic safaris and some trekking trails.
Well, same difference, and there everybody gets to follow you.
Well, yeah, and I set the itinerary up, which is also kind of fun. And it's targeted a little bit more for photographers. But the problem and the conflict is always the same. It's everybody back on the bus in 40 minutes, you know, 30 minutes. And part of what I talk about in the book is how to make the most of that hour or 2 hours that you have at a location before you get up and go. You know, as tourists, we don't have the opportunity necessarily to come back tomorrow when the light is better. You know, traveling around Chengdu now, it's overcast all the time. You know, they actually have a little local saying that when the sun comes out, the puppies bark at the sun. And, you know, and I kind of get that. But as a tourist, you don't have an opportunity. You get what you get, and you have to make the most out of it. And I think that's a challenge for a lot of photographers, professional or not.
Let's talk a moment about David Noy's world of lessons learned. For example, we're all taught coming out of the shoot, keep the sun to your back. You know, that'll help you sit up on your shots. And yet we both, I know, have shot right into the sun and come up with some awesome photos.
Well, that is a rule of thumb. And as a rule of thumb, you're likely to get pretty evenly lit, nice photographs. And I think that's, you know, where all of us start to some degree. And then as you experience and you go more places and you try more things and you experiment, and I think the digital world has made that incredibly more powerful. You hit the delete button. So you can play more and you can try other things and you can squat down. One of the things I say, find a new perspective, squat down, do a blind shot up over your head. You know, we've all seen the press photographers raise their camera up and fire off a bunch of shots, but that works for tourists too. So, you know, there are a lot of ways, and I touch upon a little of that with some technical shorts and some anecdotes where I've worked a situation a little bit differently than kind of the straightforward approach. But, you know, there's value in all of it. I say, you know, just keep shooting and try different angles and different things and walk around the different lighting and have some fun. And I think, you know, that's where photography for a lot of us is part of the travel experience. It's not a means to an end. And I talk about quite a bit using the camera as a bridge across cultures. It's so easy for travelers and photographers to hide behind their camera and keep it at a distance and play it safe. But it can also be a bridge across cultures and a way to interact with people. And it, like I mentioned, you know, those are some of my favorite travel memories.
It's interesting. As being an old dog, we started out in the film era. And when you went on assignment, you had to be conservative about what you were going to shoot, because at some point you're going to run out of film and game over. Today, the beauty of digital, as you know, is you can blow off 1,000 shots in a day, go to your hut or your motel room, and delete, 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 and keep going. So we have to remind ourselves to be liberal, be just go for it with taking even rapid fire shots.
Yeah, there's no excuse not to play. You know, and I don't even really talk about tools. And I think great travel images can be made with anything that'll capture an image. You know, a phone, a tablet, whatever. You know, I think there are a lot of ways. And just a couple of things, like understanding some compositional tools, like the rule of thirds. You know, and a lot of cameras now actually have a little grid pattern for you to move stuff a little bit off center, a little bit of exposure. You know, you don't need a whole lot of technical skill these days to be able to create some images. In fact, the less, you know, you have to think about what you're doing and the more you can interact with the people and places that you visit, the more likely you are to have engaging, wonderful photographs to take home.
David, I thought maybe you might share with us a snippet from your writing that's within the book.
Well, one of my most intense experiences was along the Ganges in the city of Varanasi. And the story that's in the book is the sacred city of Shiva. It was only my first full day in India, but I was already beginning to appreciate the beauty and rhythm nestled amidst the seeming chaos that surrounded me. As the last bit of daylight surrendered to eerie pockets of neon illumination, I mounted a cycle rickshaw near my hotel and was quickly swept through the narrow, meandering maze of tiny alleyways. Cars, rickshaws, scooters, bicycles, pedestrians, and sacred cows all competed for space in a disorderly ballet. Women dressed in saris created a colorful mosaic to accompany the cacophonous blare of honking horns that together turned the crowded streets into a noisy, swirling sea of humanity flowing towards the holy river Ganges.
Nice. David Noyes, we're just about out of time, but it's been an absolute pleasure to meet you, travel with you, and have you share your awesome life. Before we go, tell us once more about your nonprofit, because that's really what it's about for all of us, is finding a way. It's one thing to be hedonistic and experience the moment, but what do you do with it? How do you help make the world a better place?
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, it's part of the process of my journey into the developing world. Every community leader, every tribal leader that I would talk to along the way, and you ask, what can I do to help? It's a long-term process. It can take a decade or more before a young child that goes to school for the first time can actually grow up and make a difference in their community. So Innocent Eyes Project supports child education programs in the developing world. Right now we're working with organizations in Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Nicaragua, and Guatemala, where small amounts of money can really make a difference in the lives of young people.
And somebody wants to learn more, you have a website, obviously.
Yes, it's InnocentEyesProject.org.
And the world of David Noyes?
Yeah, my website is noisetravels.com. You can order my book there. It's also available on Amazon. But everything that is ordered through my website, I sign personally. It actually ships out of my basement. So, yeah, I'd love to have you come visit. I've got a couple of chapters and a little flip book that you can check out, too.
We've been visiting with David Noyes. We've been talking about his new book, The Photographing Tourist, A Storyteller's Guide to Travel and Photography. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Chengdu, China.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers from the San Francisco Bay Area include Molly Blaisdale, Lori King, and Susie Rodriguez. Melissa Corbin reporting, Tennessee. Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada. Kim Schneider from Michigan. Elaine Masters in San Diego. Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon. Rebecca Bingham, Hot Springs, Arkansas. And Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.